you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Welcome to Air Talk on 89.3 KBCC. I'm Libby Denkman. Larry Mantle has the week off. In a few minutes, a look at the rise in Asian American hate crimes locally and why many incidents of harassment or assault may not be reported. And later, new birth rate data shows COVID-19 has derailed baby plans for many families. And I want to hear from you. How has the pandemic affected your family planning? That's coming up in about 30 minutes. But first, the CDC is reportedly updating its guidance on small maskless gatherings, but only for people who have been fully vaccinated for COVID-19. We're going to tackle this and a lot more pandemic news with our medical expert. Dr. Peter Chin Hong is here, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF Medical Center. And Dr. Chin Hong, thank you very much for being back on Air Talk.
My pleasure, Libby. Thanks for having me on.
I want to welcome everybody who has a question for Dr. Chin Hong to give us a call, 866-893-5722. That's 866-893-5722. You can also tweet us, go on our Facebook page, go on kpcc.org, or email us to ask a question. Every day on Air Talk, we are providing you access to a medical expert to answer any questions you have about the COVID-19 pandemic or about your own health situation vis-a-vis this virus. And first off, Dr. Chin Hong, let's start with that CDC guidance. What should people know about the new expectations and recommendations?
Well, I think, Libby, that it's okay to for small groups, and the operative word is small here, to gather in intimate settings without masks. And I think the statistical chance of two non-responders to vaccines, and this is granted that you've waited 2 weeks since the second dose if you have a two-dose series, the data suggests that the chances are very small for two non-responders to transmit COVID to each other in a very small intimate setting. On the other hand, you're not going to see any rock concerts or raves with, you know, hundreds of vaccinated people all together, because again, that point shows that the statistical chance of two non-responders to vaccines will be higher. And if the community prevalence is high, you can imagine having transmissions in that large setting.
As somebody who's not a medical expert, can you explain what you mean by non-responders? Does that mean that they have the vaccine, so they potentially, there's a possibility they could be asymptomatic transmitters, but their bodies don't actually respond to the virus?
Yeah, so there are two issues in that statement, and thanks for asking me to disentangle it. So the easiest thing to understand is that, you know, there's a chance in the real world that you didn't respond to the vaccine, that your immune system didn't develop neutralizing antibodies after you get the vaccine. But that chance is really, really small. So if you have a small group of vaccinated people, you can say that chance is virtually zero. But the chance increases the larger the group is. And so that's one issue. The second issue is that because of that possibility, there are two things that can happen. One is that a vaccinated person could transmit infection as a receptor, even though they won't get sick, to the non-responder or the person who doesn't have antibodies. Or two people with no antibodies could then also transmit to each other. But again, the data in transmission is actually looking pretty good over time. We have now data from the J&J vaccine that shows that it prevents asymptomatic infection in more than 70% of people. And now we're looking at real-world data in the UK and in Israel showing that on a population level, it not only prevents symptomatic infection, but also asymptomatic infection. The fact that it prevents asymptomatic infection suggests that it will also prevent transmission.
So non-responders are people who have the vaccine, but there's a very small chance that even though they're fully vaccinated, their immune system hasn't responded in a way that's expected to provide them safety from the virus?
Yes. So I'll give you an example. Say you got an organ transplant recently, and then you got a vaccine after that, say in the first week or two. We give medicines so that you don't reject the organ that you've received. And that medicine may also prevent you from developing antibodies to the vaccine. So in that case, for example, you may not respond to the vaccine at that time.
I want to talk about the Biden administration moving up its expectations for having a vaccine for every adult in the United States. That doesn't mean that everyone's going to get it, but it means that they will be able to manufacture and have a dose or the sufficient number of doses to fully vaccinate every adult in the U.S. by the end of May now. What do you make of the timeline that's moved up?
I greet that news with a lot of joy. I think that so far the style of the Biden administration has been in under-promising and over-delivering, so setting appropriate expectations. And I think that, setting, for example, a goal of 100 million vaccines in 100 days is totally doable, and many people actually believe that's going to be exceeded. And similarly, with the timeline, they started off with a sort of a long timeline, even at some point saying some high school age students won't be vaccinated until later in the year. And now that's moved up first to the end of summer and now to the end of May for the availability of 345 million. So that's one issue. The second issue, of course, is availability, as you imply, doesn't translate into distribution, doesn't translate into people accepting the vaccine, even if they were invited to get one, and doesn't take into consideration sort of the threat of variants. But all things considered, I'm psyched.
Psyched is a good word for it. A lot of us are psyched about these, at least improving and some optimism that's coming out of this news. We're getting questions in from our listeners. Again, 866-893-5722 is the number to call if you want to ask a question. Dr. Peter Chin Hong is here with me from UCSF. He's here to answer your questions at 866-893-5722. And Dr. Chin Hong, first Jim in Hermosa Beach asks, do antihistamines interfere with the efficacy of the mRNA vaccines?
That's a great question from Jim. So unlike, say, Motrin or ibuprofen, where there's some sort of biologic plausibility of maybe interfering with antibody production if you take it before, even though that's kind of been debunked by most people, the antihistamine itself probably won't have as much or profound effect as ibuprofen, for example. So the short answer is no. And if people get a lot of itching or they feel scratchy after the vaccine, it's safe to take an antihistamine. It's also safe to take, it's allergy season. I know a lot of people have been taking antihistamines. There's no reason to stop that for fear of dampening the immune system if you are in the line to get a vaccine.
All right. Moving on, we have Chuck in El Sereno with a question that is on people's mind, and not everybody have the courage to ask a radio show about it. Chuck is asking, if I am fully vaccinated, can I have a sexual relationship with someone who does not always wear a mask but is also fully vaccinated?
That's a great question. My feeling is yes, it falls into the rules of a small, intimate gathering of people who have been totally vaccinated. So I would say that the chances of getting COVID or transmitting COVID is super small in that particular scenario, particularly if you stay with a small group of people or one person and you create your own immunity bubble.
Yeah, that's a rather small and intimate gathering for sure, Dr. Chin Hong, and I'm glad that we have that information. Going on with some of the news headlines out of what's happening in California. Blue Shield, the health giant, it's based in Oakland. It is taking over vaccine distribution in the state starting this week. And different counties are going in different waves. LA County is not one of the first waves. But the point of this insurance company taking over is, they say, to increase efficiency. They believe that they can ramp up vaccine distribution from 1 million vaccines a week to 4 million by the end of March. And they've also talked about equity issues. Now, this is midstream, switching to a new company that's going to administer the distribution of vaccines. And so far, it's been individual counties making their own rules. Now it's going to be a more centralized system. Dr. Chin Hong, any reaction or analysis to this change?
Well, Libby, I think, like everything in life, there are pros and potential cons. I think you've outlined the pros really well. I think we really need a maestro or conductor to oversee this giant effort in the country's most populous state. Certainly, it'll be simplification. It'll generally be one-stop shopping, even though Kaiser is also going to be involved. And the federal government will also continue to have its own stream into the state. But I think the threats are, of course, privacy and vulnerability of health information. It is a health system, so to speak, overall. And there's been talk before of Blue Shield trying to get health information from the University of California health systems. So that's always the threat. It is a business after all. So one would wonder what sort of business benefits will accrue to the organization afterwards. And it's going to be sort of a politically lightning rod point for Governor Newsom. He's invested and put a lot of heft behind this initiative. So if it fails, I think it's going to have big repercussions for him.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong from UCSF. He's an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF. He's answering your questions about COVID-19 here on Air Talk. And I'm going to take Nicole in La Cañada, who has a question about antibiotics. Nicole, go ahead.
Yes, if you were recently vaccinated, could taking an antibiotic like Cipro for something relatively minor reduce the development of immunity?
Thanks, Nicole. I think your line was just a little fuzzy, but it sounded like you were talking about Cipro, whether you were recently vaccinated, taking an antibiotic like Cipro, could that reduce immunity? Dr. Chin Hong?
Cipro shouldn't have any interaction with the vaccine, so it shouldn't have I wouldn't have any problem with taking Cipro after it. So Cipro covers mainly bacteria, which are a different class of organisms from the viruses like SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. So there shouldn't be much interaction. And Cipro itself doesn't really suppress the immune system, so I wouldn't be worried about that sort of like bigger point either. So safe to take it as long as you take it responsibly, of course. And that's my feeling.
Sue in Beverly Wood is responding to our earlier conversation about non-responders, and she's wondering if there's any way to tell if you are a non-responder. And maybe we should also talk about how often that occurs when people are vaccinated.
Yeah, so it's not a guidance or recommendation yet, and there are some holes in this particular test that I'll mention, but you can do it. An antibody test, again, it depends on the type of antibody test you get. It's not a recommendation from public health or my personal recommendation because you're not really sure if a negative antibody test means that you're not protected. But that's something you can check for immune response. But then from the studies, we know that Pfizer and Moderna, for example, are 95% effective in general. So there's a super small chance that there will be people who won't respond to those. J&J is about, 70% effective overall. But again, nobody in that group got hospitalized or got and more than 90% effective against severe disease. So it just depends on what you're looking at. But in general, super high efficacy on all the vaccines approved so far from emergency use authorization. And so that's kind of like how they stack up in general.
Got it. Emily in East LA is on the line. Emily, what's your question for Dr. Chin Hong?
Hi, I'm actually about to get my first shot. I'm in the drive-thru line at Cal State LA. Two questions before they I do that. Will it be safe to fly with a toddler who obviously won't be vaccinated? I will be, to see some family over the summer. And she's turning two, my daughter, in May. Can I safely have some sort of small gathering birthday party for her? What would that look like in your opinion? Thank you so much.
And Emily, just really quick before you drop off, would the people at the birthday also be the adults be fully vaccinated? Or do you know the status of, you know, the types of people you would be talking about for a small birthday party?
I think the hope would be as many as possible. You know, definitely grandparents. But I think like, you know, my husband has not, for example, been able to get an appointment yet. But that would be my ideal scenario, vaccinated adults.
Great. Emily, thank you for the call. And Dr. Chin Hong, what do you think?
That's a great question from Emily. So first of all, in an intimate group, say Emily and her two-year-old traveling on a plane. First of all, two-year-olds, super low likelihood of both getting COVID and transmitting COVID in general. So that, you know, it probably is going to be okay in that setting. Of course, on a plane, everyone's going to be masked because in that setting, there's mixed people who have vaccinations and don't have vaccinations. But the risk is going to be super low, both to Emily and to her daughter, who's two. In a mixed intimate setting of vaccinated and unvaccinated people for a birthday party, I probably would feel most comfortable in an outdoor setting still with everyone wearing masks. Of course, Emily's daughter can blow the candles out without the mask on. But in a mixed adult group, that's the recommendation. If it's an intimate small group of vaccinated people, including unvaccinated younger kids, it's probably going to be okay. But again, with the caveat that there's a chance that kids can transmit to each other, although very low likelihood compared to adults.
This is really an example of the way each person has their own personal situations that they have their heart set on, family they want to see, events they want to celebrate, milestones they want to mark. And the navigation of that has been so difficult over the past year. But health experts like yourself, Dr. Peter Chin Hong from UCSF, it's really helpful to hear your feedback and your guidance or recommendations when it comes to these types of decisions that everyone has to make for themselves. We're going to have a couple more questions for Dr. Peter Chin Hong right after this break. Coming back, I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Air Talk. Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Dr. Peter Chin Hong with me from UCSF answering your questions. We've got a couple more here before we have to break and move on. Dr. Chin Hong, Alex in Arcadia asking, how does immune protection from people who have had the virus compare to people who have been vaccinated? Do we know yet?
That's a great question from Alex and an important issue. So people who get COVID do have antibody protection, and that's probably one of the explanations why in heavily hit areas like Southern California and California in general recently, some people have proposed that one of the reasons why our numbers are going down, apart from human behavior, is the fact that a lot of people have been exposed to it already. But the bad news is natural immunity in COVID is relatively short-lived. And when we say short-lived, it's probably a matter of months, so maybe 7 months max. There's a thousand-fold difference within people who've gotten natural infection from those who respond with antibodies super well and those who don't respond that well. Whereas vaccine immunity is more predictable and it's thought to be more durable, so it lasts a lot longer. And but we'll have info from the tens of thousands of people ahead of us by about 12 months who have been in the trials. So their antibody levels will be continued to be checked. So that's the reason why people who've had COVID need to get a vaccine. Whether or not they need two shots versus one shot is something people are debating right now.
And an earlier question was asking how long you wait if you had COVID, this person had COVID in January. How long do you wait until you get that vaccine?
Yeah, so the guidance right now is about 3 months. You can safely wait 3 months and then get the vaccine. Again, it gives you a cushion if you think that most people will have some protection for about 7 months after natural COVID. There have been reports of people, you know, getting a little bit more adverse effects. But again, when I think of adverse effects, they're not really adverse because it's like your immune system being super trained to fight COVID if it would have come back again. So, but people who've had COVID tend to get a little bit more of those kinds of reactions earlier on.
That makes sense. Finally, I just want to get your reaction to Governor Greg Abbott of Texas deciding that the state is going to 100% reopen soon, and he's lifting the mask mandate. When you look at the numbers between California and Texas, their case rate is much higher than in California. Their vaccination rate is much lower. But a lot of folks in California, say people who are, you know, talking about recalling our governor, for example, are saying California is simply being too cautious and restrictive in its health recommendations and rules. What is your take on what's going on between Texas and California and the differences in the way states are handling COVID?
It's something that I lose sleep over, to tell you the truth, Libby, and I don't even live in Texas, obviously, but I think for a state that's having 6 times higher test positivity rate than us right now in the, you know, double digits versus 2.3% in California, you know, it is a big, bold move. I think there's a lot of COVID still around. You know, I think there's a disconnect in the community, and when I go to the grocery, from what I'm still seeing in the hospital, we're still 3 times a higher census of COVID at my hospital compared to October. So it's there. And whether or not we have a honeymoon period before the next surge remains to be seen. Spring break is coming up. South Padre Island is in Texas. I remember back in the day, people used to go there. So, you know, I'm worried. It's a time that I'm just, you know, crossing my fingers that everything will be okay.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, I appreciate, and I know that this is a tough time, of course, you know, somebody like you saying that you lose sleep over what's happening in Texas, it just speaks volumes about, you know, the heart behind the work that you do and all the medical providers who are trying to get us through this pandemic. So, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, thank you very much for being here on Air Talk.
Thanks so much, Libby.
We're going to move on. I know that we had some calls on the line, and we'll try to get to more of those questions tomorrow. Thank you so much to everybody who talked with me during the doctor's conversation. We are going to talk in just a minute here about Asian American hate crimes and the increasing incidence of those in Southern California and nationwide. I'm Libby Denkman, in for Larry Mantle today. Back with more in just a minute.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.